Pune and we'll go.
So
I was driving. And when we went there, it was nice. It's a very good place. There's a rest house right on the ocean itself. There's a huge rock that juts out, and on it is built that place, that house. And we used to frequently visit the one man who used to man the place and cook food and all that. They were known to us. So now, of course, the women didn't go. We used to go. So they knew us and all that. And everything was done right and all that. They were very comfortable there. Baba liked the whole sea breeze is there and the sea is there. We, as if we are right on the sea itself. Not on the beach or shore or anything that sort. One day after, on the second day or third day, I forget, he suggests that, well, if the women would like to go out for swimming. Because they have come to the shore, close to the sea. So find a suitable place, a solitary place where the women can go without being disturbed by men and all that. Mera, Mani, and Mehru, and somebody else was there. Who was there? I forget.
None. Gavir there, or had she?
No. Yeah, Gavir was there, right. Gavir. Mera, Mani, Gavir had come because he's 49 now. So there. Fine. So I went out and went round and this and that. And, you know, this morning we were talking about the ocean and how the ocean itself is dry-lipped. Have you heard that?
It's dry-lipped?
Yes. The shores are the dry lips of the ocean. It has dry lips. Yeah.
You say?
Tell you, I didn't say so. Some great one has said so.
I'll take his word.
Yeah. So that is the case when a person loves the love. He always remains dry-lipped, although he has the ocean to love there. Mm. So we found that one of the dry lips, you see, that could take us to a solitary place on the shore. And we went there. I went there, of course, and I noticed that fine palm trees were there. And solid tea. Nobody is there to disturb. No person is there. It's fine. I returned happily that I found the spot, but it's a long way off. I knew that. I don't know how Baba would like the idea and all that. So I went and reported to him. How far? I said, Baba, it's a bit long, but we have to wind the way and get out of the human race here, you see. So never mind, he says, but it's a solitary place. I said, yeah, nobody is there. But it's nice, shady, and fine place. Good, Baba says, we'll go the next day. So the next day the women go. Baba and myself are leading the way and the women are following. When we go there, he liked the place very much. But it took a long time for us to go there. And then the women, of course, changed and they had to go for the swim. We sat, both of us, and we sat under the palm tree. And after about 10-15 minutes, women are swimming, we have gone at a distance, you see. You can see just the heads there. Baba told them not to go far, but you know, women never, you know that. So they were enjoying the swim. And after about 15 minutes or so, Baba says, would you like to swim? I said, well, yeah. He says, I would like to swim too. You like to swim? Yeah, come on. And I knew swimming. I'm a good swimmer. I used to be. I don't know how it will be now. But once it is said, once you know swimming, you never forget. So...
What year was this?
49. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what happened is that we go out. No. Then I said, all right. So I take Baba Sadra out, you see, and all that, and he's on his shorts now. Baba said, I don't know swimming. Baba doesn't know swimming. He didn't know swimming. And some one day, let us digress a bit, one day what had happened was that he had the habit of asking those who would come close to him, the kids and the young ones, not as old as him, but as old as him. They'll say, well, do you know swimming? So he'll say, yes or no. If he said no, then he says, you don't know swimming. You should learn swimming. How will you swim in my ocean if you don't know, if you were not to know? Learned swimming in this ocean. So he had, time and again he'll put that question to youngsters, especially youngsters. Both men and women, he'll put that way. But one day what had happened, I think it was Hoshang Bharucha. He always puts a spoke in it. So he shouted from the back of the crowd, says, "But Baba, we have heard that you don't know swim. You don't know swimming." And I heard that, and but that came the reply. How am I supposed to know swimming, Baba? Says, "I am the ocean itself." That's how he said. Immediately he said that. How am I supposed to know? Yeah, with his gesture, how am I supposed to know? I am the ocean. I am the ocean itself. So that's how it is. So, So what happened is that Baba did not know swimming. That was a confirmed fact. So he tells me that, "Look, you have to hold me tight and we shouldn't go very deep into it." I said, "No, I'll hold you, yeah." And what excuse was there? That time and again, the doctors who were around Baba, they always would force Baba, "Now that you go so often to the seaside, and because for us we used to go to, why don't you just get inside the water and ease your limbs and all that sort of thing? That is good for you and all that." And never he had done. But this time it was his whim to go in the ocean to swim. So I took him there. I had, of course, changed on my shorts, and we both went, waded through. And when it was nice chest deep, I said, "Baba," then of course it is always that, the imbalance takes place, you know, those who swim. So then he was there and I held him and I said, "Baba, now come on, spread your arms and spread your legs and swim, paddle, do something, whatever you want." So I took him there and he was paddling like this and doing this and doing that and so forth. And we went some distance, you see, and I got him back. Because I must have my own stand, you see. How can I? And then says, "All right, now you swim." Yeah. So I took him out there, dried him properly, put on sadra and all that. Says, "Baba," says, "you go and swim now." So I said, "Yeah, I'll go." And I had a good swim and all that. Hardly I began to enjoy swimming, he called me back. Says, "You know, you have to go to the mosque there." I said, "I knew that you'd like the place because of the musk, because there was a very good musk over there. So we should go to the musk, let the women shout at them that we are going to the musk bazaar." It was on the bazaar, main street there, in a shop. "And let them go back. Let them go home after swimming." So I shouted out, "We are going for the musk. When you feel like going back, go back." And so forth. So they waved their hand like that, and meaning that they have heard it. Okay, so then Baba, so we want to go. So naturally I took the regular route. So Baba stands there and says, "Well, have we to go back all that distance?" I said, "Yeah." So he points out that suppose if we go in this direction, see how there you can see the streets there. There's this, the bazaar is there. I said, "But there's the ocean in between. How can we go through that?" Then see those people, the youngsters are there. There were fishermen. It was the backwater. And the fishermen there, the children were there, and the men were there, having a catch there. And what they had was, that contraption was the rollers, you know, the tree trunks carved out hollow. And they used to roll like that. And in the hollowness of that, they would put their catch, collect that, and they would swim, just pushing the canoe-like things. He says, "We can go and sit in that and they'll push us across. And it will be just 5 minutes from here, instead of taking 3/4 of an hour or an hour like that." I said, "Baba, it's very dangerous." That's when that privilege comes, you see, to discuss and argue and all. No, Baba says, "Oh, well, we are not going that way. It's so sunny and all that. How to go there? And let's go this way." I said, "Baba, it doesn't appeal to me. You shouldn't take that. No, it's not good." And he says, "No, we'll go. Tip them, ask them that they should take us cautiously and all that." I said, "Whatever you do, Baba, that thing, I see it. That's not safe at all." He says, no, you go." He insisted, and I persisted in trying to dissuade him, but nothing. He insisted. I said, "Hold on, come on." But in the heart of hearts, I knew that there's going to be an accident. I felt it that way. So I called those boys close to me. "Come here." So they came in a glee, you know, gleeful mood. I said, "Look, We have to go, you know, to that marketplace there. Can you take us from here to there, just push us there? Says, yes, we can do that. I'll pay you. Nice. Tips. Take us safe, safe. See, we shouldn't get wet because we were in clothes. See, yeah. And I had a bag with me in my right hand, and Baba's other coat was there, it's all there. And I said, look, we shouldn't be wet. He said, no, no, I will. I said, look, if you reach us safe, I'll give you an extra tip. Yes, yes. And no mischief, no play, nothing. Because we knew these urchins were there. But so the one that, the party that had come to us for this bargain were youngsters, teenagers. And we could rely upon them. They were not kids, but they were teenagers. So it was good. And I said, Baba, I still told Baba, it's not good, Baba. I don't feel like it. No, I said, it will go. What's there? This, that's the distance. And the distance was from here as far back to what we call the dispensary's end, the other end of the dispensary, from here to there. That was that, what you call, backwaters or something like that. Yeah. Inland, yeah. And at the time when it is tide, naturally it is the ocean-like thing. And at ebb time, when low tides are there, naturally that is that, all the slush and all that, that stink of fish and all that. It was low tide at that time. So that's why they were all there, you see. Like when the lakes get dried up here, all the crows come to pick on the fish, you see, all the time. It was like that. Easy catch for them. So that was the low tide. And I didn't like the stink, and the prospects were not bright. But he insisted. So I conducted Baba there, and he put his foot there, just his foot, and he started rolling. You see, I said, Baba, it's very dangerous. He said, no, no, it's all right. So he went and sat inside. And it just turned this way, this way, and we just caught. Now, I being a heavy person, you see, it would be very impossible for me, because I'm an unbalanced person, you see, like that. One, in one hand there's a heavy sack in my hand, one shoulder is loaded with that, and here, what to do? And so I, somehow or other, I stepped, and it just, I said, hold properly, and I got inside and sat down. We felt like stopping our breathing, you see. It was like that for me. So we sit there facing each other, and they are pushing and carrying us. See, Baba says, yeah, how smooth, it's nothing. We'll go in 2 minutes, we'll be there, you see. And we are halfway through that. And just then, some urchins from some other place, they saw us sitting, you know, strangers like this. It was a strange sight for them to see us like that. Others are naked over there. And they came running, swimming, you know. And they started fooling with the boys. I said, look here, be careful, no play, take great care. And one of the urchins there who had come, he went underwater and pulled the other man's leg. And that fellow was holding this, so the whole thing toppled, topsy-turvy. And we were, both of us, we were in the ocean. And it must be about 20 feet, 25 feet deep there. And the turbidity was so great, I totally lost Baba. When I'm sinking. I can see that. I'm sinking and I'm just trying to fumble there and I can't see anything. It's such a dirty, stinging thing, you know. And then all of a sudden, something comes and I catch hold of Baba. I got Baba by this arm like that. And in one hand, my satchel is there, which is getting heavier still because it is waterproof. The water is there. All the water bottles were inside and other stuff was inside. And so I got Baba. But we were sinking, and we almost touched the ground. I could see that we had touched the bottom of that place. So it was good that we did that. So with one jerk, you know, one kick there at the bottom, we began to rise up. That is the usual way. And so we got up, our heads were out, and I began to swim. And I told Baba that, Baba, you just paddle the way that we paddled. You continue to that, Baba. You do that. So Baba helped me out, you see, doing all that paddling with the feet and all that. And I caught hold of his hand, and with great difficulty we crossed the water there. And I was breathless there, and then we got on the shore. And we were dripping with dirt and filth, you know. All the algae was there just on our eyes, and we just took it off and all that sort of thing, stinking like anything. And we just quietly went to the street, nice bazaar. So we I straight away took Baba behind the buildings that were there, and there was a dilapidated little house there, and I told him that Baba said something should be done. I said, yeah. She said, go back home and get to the rest house and get new clothes, clean clothes. I said, all right. When he is fresh, and he looks at me and says, I said, I know, but it's all right, it doesn't matter. He says, you don't try. I said, well. She says, now let's go to the mosque. So while we are going, we have come back, we went to the mosque, and I'm sitting there. The mosque was in one of the shops there. He had a good time. And when the contact is perfect with the mosque, you know, the mosques are, as he calls them, his, and he loves them very much. And when he has a very satisfying, that he has loved them enough and all that, what happens, he's very happy. And he's in a mood to give us gifts and give us sweet drinks or ice cream plates or this or that. We can at that time get anything from him. Yeah. So he appeared, when he came out of the room, he was so radiant and very, very, and even his gait, he would change, you see. So he's very happy and very fine, good contact, I'm really happy, very happy. And I said, yeah. And I looked as if I looked like a ghoul, you know. With all that dirty, slimy thing. And we are walking, and again, we are going through the street. Now we are heading towards the rest house. And while on the way, he stops and looks at me and gives a laugh, a smile, a laughter like, a chuckle like laugh. And says, look at you, how you look. Just see what will people think about you. I said, well, I told you that, Baba, it's not a happy thing. I felt something in my heart and all that. But luckily, we are out now. He says, yeah, you did a good job. I said, yeah, luckily I found your arms. Otherwise, what would have happened? You don't know swimming, and I knew it, but where to find you? So he says, yeah. And then he looks at me and says, you lent me your arm and got me out of this dirty, filthy ocean. The time will come when I will lend you my arm and get you out of this filthy illusion. Yeah. And I'm waiting for that arm. That's the thing. It is to live on the assurance.
Staying on here to serve. Then that means you've harnessed yourself to his carriage. You're harnessed. You have to be walking with blinkers on. No distractions beside that side. After all, how much is that that he's asking of us? He's really a very compassionate and a very easy master. And even the little thing that he asks, we find it insurmountable. But it should not be. Then it must be different. Marabat must be different. I've not been very happy with some of the things I hear. Sometimes I don't hear, sometimes I hear. But, you know, be alert. Look at yourself. And as I say, you're like horses that have the blinkers on. It is a one-pointed thing. Our life with Baba, I can only describe as a tightrope walking. There was the slightest this thing we could have dropped here, the slightest there. It had to be one-pointed. If you're giving your life to Baba, it's not that you can reserve it and say, I'll give him so much on Sunday, I've done this and that's enough. It is nonsense. One-pointed. Baba must be your life. Then he is so compassionate, he allows for you to do your responsibilities, for you to be at entertainments. He's not restricting that. He's allowing you to have games and to do your duties and all. But within that framework, he is very, very strict on certain things that he has laid down. He has commanded, this I want. He's not the loser if you don't give it. But you have to give that. It is just a very little thing when you come to think of what the perfect masters used to ask from their disciples. They were really slave drivers. They were very strict. This is nothing. And also compared to our life with Baba, what we see is easy. But then it's another generation. I tell you, the time will come, a generation will come, which will look back and think you all as absolute weaklings, that they couldn't do this.
Oh, this was so easy for them? Because they will be prepared. They will be, which is, I suppose, you again will come as future generations, but there will be the preparation. And then it will not mean so much to Baba as it will mean to Baba now, while it is very difficult, while we have the weaknesses. Make the effort. If he has given you the love, this opportunity, his glance, his personal attention to you, is that too much that he asks? Give it. Please, and I also say, don't distract the atmosphere in Mehrabad by only this. I mean, this should be an infinitesimal part, like everything else is a part. It's like a dish that you cook. This spice, is too much. It's too much salt. Don't. Always try and balance. Talk more about Baba. Sing songs about Baba. Be friends. But don't let there be distraction. And don't distract the residents over here. We have not bound them. Nobody's bound. Neither are you all bound. Baba would tell us, you're not bound to stay with me. As Eric says again and again, we exercise our freedom to become his slaves. And that is the only binding there is. And Baba would say, all right, you can be out in the world, do what you like. But when you're linked with me, when you're mine, you have to have this. You have certain privileges, so you have to make certain sacrifices. So, again, I have asked Heather and Janet, the receptionist, and I hopefully, and Pat, that at the Pilgrim Center at breakfast time, every morning, the custodian, the night custodian, will stand up and read a passage from Baba, from some book of Baba. It's a fresh reminder, just like when you wake up, wouldn't you like to smell the fragrance of the flowers in the garden, which we do in Mehrabad. Every day I say, oh, how it is in the cities where the air is polluted. And here in the morning we wake up and go out and you just get the fresh fragrance of flowers. So let this fragrance of Baba's words help you start the day. And now we're getting more and more young ones coming here to be as residents. And the others come and refresh themselves, take of Baba's ocean and spread it out there. Their work is just as important. The ones who are not staying here is not less important. In fact, it is more so because you go back and you spread it out. You give it out to the others. You share it with the others. And that's what Baba's ocean is for. But keep him foremost, uppermost in your lives, in your minds, in your hearts. Let every action be motivated by that. And that doesn't mean that there are no jokes, there's no laughter, there's no friendship, there's no singing. Baba's never, there's even games. But remember, it's all within the framework of Baba. All these are dots and dashes on the canvas that's entirely Baba. And we are not to forget that. So I'm glad Eric brought this up. I wanted to say this.
Oh,
and
I never thought that it would start.
What can I do with
it?
One
anchor.
And the funny thing is, that when we played games, or we were taken out for outings, say, while we were traveling with Baba and the Blue, go to the zoo, sometimes to a picture. It was never when we, whatever your mood, whatever your liking for that moment, Baba said, do it, and we did it. Play a game, you may not be in the mood at all to play a game. Your mood, whatever your liking for that moment, Baba said, and we did it. Play a game, you may not be in the mood at all to play a game. You've been in a sort of a sulky mood, or you have so much to do, or you're not, you're feeling a bit out of sorts. But we learn to want the way he wants. And once we make that effort, because there is no other way, said, all right, Baba wants us to play. We groan, moan inside, but we make the effort. I tell you, the moment you made that effort, we were really enjoying it. And that's what makes me think that when Baba says, try, that's what he means. Just when you want to do a thing, not doing just what you want to do, but what he wants, when he wants. And that trying completely changed the picture. In fact, we would the game. As he says, when we would play, women would play volleyball with Baba, we were so excited. No, you cheated. No, you threw the ball. No, you did that.
And when we were at the height of it, all Baba would do is clap. And the sound of that clap would come through, no matter what the commotion. And we'd all stop and look at Baba. And Baba said, finished. And we just drop it to learn to get out of something or to get into something when he wants it, to be sensitive to his pleasure. And that trying, because we have to make that effort. That's what Baba said. Try. If you really try, he helps. There's no doubt about it. Otherwise, of course, there are many excuses. Oh, but of course, we're not with Baba. Oh, but I'm so weak. Have you ever read The Conference of the Birds? The book called The Conference of the Birds. You all should read it. It's all allegorical. There's the hoopoe bird with a stripe. And I love that hoopoe bird with a crown. It's a very regal bird with a cape that he wore. Excuses for ourselves, because there are many excuses we have. Excuses and justifications. But put out their hands. They always want to bring you in. No.
Now, God.
Excuses. Try. And make it honest, sincere choice. There is no compulsion on that. But when you do, stick to it. At least make the effort to do it. And I tell you, when you make that effort.
To come to your heart.
We didn't do anything to make this happen. We haven't told anybody about it. What's happening? And again, we remember. When Baba says, I do my work. And he really is doing it.
As I say, when even us, whom he has let be here for a while, for you all, because of his love for you. And when somebody said, oh, what will happen when you're gone? I said, look, we are not indispensable. We are irreplaceable as the particular individual that we are because of our association with Baba. But we're not indispensable. What is happening now? He's looking after it all. I mean, he's amazing us all the time. Even though we thought we knew him, again and again, oh, when we hear your stories, when we hear the little ways, the simple ways. Baba's is always Baba's simple explanations, which I call the real sermons, the things that he has said seemingly casually, you know, just like that. And they have been real sermons to me. I mean, there are a number of things as I look back and I find, and we thought it was just Baba said something lightly, even humorously. Like the time when Baba would come over in the morning, every morning from the women's side and be here with the men mandali. And he would come to the mandali hall, be seated on this chair. And along with him would come a little cocker spaniel, Peter. Plop, 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 he would come. And Peter had a habit when he would lie down and rest, he would go to sleep, and he would snore like a human. And the palace, whatever it was, you see. I said, I don't know. You told me not to look at the end. So we'll have to wait, Baba. We'll have to have patience. He'd give me a look, you know, with a twinkle in his eye, but sort of, oh, so you're being cheeky and naughty. Mm? So, and then, I wondered, thought, now why does Baba always like a happy ending to his stories? And then I thought, because Baba knows that the real story, the story that he tells us, has a happy ending. It's not the happy chapters. We go through chapters that are different. Supposing I've read the story, and now you're reading it, and you're at a chapter where it's a very sad part, and you're crying, and you're so worried, and it pains you, and I tell you, oh, don't, you know, don't, it's all right, Nancy, don't worry, I can't tell you the ending is happy, I said, don't worry, episode thing, it's just chapter, so we have to trust him so wholeheartedly. So even with our eyes closed, knowing that he says it's a happy ending, that's fine. The only thing what we have to do is while we are holding his hand, he's the guide, don't argue. Follow him. Not only follow him in walking, but follow what he has said.
obey him. All he wants is his obedience. And there's nothing to worry about. Nothing. Not, that doesn't mean I don't worry. I'm just saying that's what he says.
When you read the Tolkien stories to Baba, what did Baba say
about that? The Tolkien stories I've read twice to Baba. You see, Margaret Cross was our book supplier. I read whatever Margaret sent. And Margaret sent this Tolkien trilogy. First it was The Hobbit, then the trilogy. I read it out to Baba completely. And you see, there was no skipping over lines. And I read as long as Baba wanted it. Sometimes it would be a few minutes, sometimes it could be 2 hours, sometimes it could be three times a day, sometimes it could be once. I mean, according to what Baba's pleasure. But after it was read the first time, then after an interval of a few years, Baba asked that I read it again. But after reading to Baba the first time, it really became popular, became the rage. And so these raids would come in Time magazine, which Rana would show Baba, you see this? And Baba would be so pleased. Have me read it out. Yeah. See, Baba said. And then Mara or somebody would walk in. Read it again, read it again. Mara, did you hear this? Read it aloud, read it aloud. He was so pleased. But it's often happened when Baba has liked something, it has become popular universally. It has really become popular the world over, like some songs that we know and things. So then, when we read it the second time, the only thing Baba has said about this was that it's the same in the past. It's similar. He said it was he compared it. All the things that you go through, but you win. It's the same old thing.
Did he get worked up during the scary parts of the Baba? Story?
No, but he was naughty sometimes. You know, Gohar, the doctor, I mean, she didn't mind the sight of blood or cuts or shots, but talk to her about a spider or a cockroach. Sometimes in the hall, suddenly they'd be screech. And they said, my God, what's happened now? And we'd all rush. And the doctor was pointing a finger at a cockroach that was there. She's much better now. But so when it came to the part of Sholog, that big spider, Baba said, wait, wait. Let go her come. Now that I'll repeat another little thing because we're talking about reading to Baba. You know, Rex tells stories of Nero Wolfe. Baba only wanted Nero Wolfe. It's the detective that he liked. Like he wanted Poirot, not just Agatha Christie's books, not where Miss Marple was, but Poirot. He would make sign like this. To himself. You know, another Poirot. And, of course, Nero Wolfe was like this because he's so fat. So his first love was Edgar Wallace. Way before that in school was Sexton Blake. So, but we read a lot of Edgar Wallace's books were read to him by Rano, myself, Margaret, and all. So then, he loved this Nero Wolfe book so much that we had to read it again. I had to read it twice after an interval. I put the date on, and after an interval of a year or more, then they would be repeated to Baba. So just in the month of January 1969, in the beginning, I was reading to Baba. It was not far from mid-January. I was reading to Baba one of Rex Stout's books of Nero Wolfe. In fact, it was called The Red Box, and it was never finished. It was after mid-January, and it was never finished. So I just put the bookmark in it, and I still have it. So Baba, at that time, see, that's true. Baba in the afternoons would go from his bed with the support of Mara's arm to the chair that's in Baba's room, the one that Harry Kenmore had brought. You've seen that upholstered chair, that beautiful chair by the by the cupboard. So Baba would go over there, and then I would start reading and everybody would be around. Now, those days, Baba looked frail. He looked indrawn. And as he sat in that chair, it almost seemed as if the work was done. Now that I can say that now. As I said before, it's like someone who's been flying a kite and now he's drawing it in. And he was sitting there in the sadra, sitting on the chair, and his eyes were closed. And there was something very different about Baba. He was looking very beautiful, and yet he was sort of resting with his eyes closed, and you wanted to keep looking at him. Even while I was reading, I would do that. But Baba's eyes were closed, and it was a long time I kept reading. And then I came to a passage. It was a repeat book, mind you. I had read it to Baba. I remembered that this passage Baba had really enjoyed. So when I came to that passage, I read it, but then I stopped. I stopped because Baba was snoring lightly, you know, deep breathing, a snoring. And I said, but Baba's resting. He's not listening. What a shame. Okay, we'll stop. I'll stop. I looked at the others. They all agreed with me. Stop. The moment I stopped, Baba, even without opening his eyes, said, why did you stop? And then he opened his eyes. And I said, well, Baba, this is a passage which you had enjoyed so much, but now that you were resting, sleeping, I thought that... And Baba looked at me and said, I heard everything. I said, what did I read? And Baba told me. And the laugh was on me. They were all looking at me. So I went on reading. On and on. And Baba was again in that same position. That indrawn look and the eyes closed. And again, that slight snoring, deep breathing. And this went on and on. I was getting a bit hoarse too, and Tony, and the others also looked at me. They said, Marianne, we were looking at each other, and silently with our eyes and eyebrows, we were saying, stop, stop. Let Baba rest, he's resting. So I stopped. The moment I stopped, the second I stopped, why did you stop? So then when he opened his eyes, Mara said, but Baba, you're resting, you must be tired such a long time. And Baba said, even if my eyes are closed. Now, you see how there can be two interpretations to the same gestures? At that time, it could have been it was read as, even if I'm asleep, you go on reading. I'm hearing everything. But you see, this gesture is reading aloud, uttering, asking, speaking, saying, anything that comes from the lips in a sound, the same gesture. So he said, we realized later, he said, even if my eyes are closed, you go on speaking, I listen. And we realized later, it was a message. Even when you think that I don't see, that I've gone, go on. You speak, I listen. And we realized that he does. Oh, we have seen Baba chuckling. So, really, even without sound, you really could say Baba laughed. Somehow it came from him, that enjoyment, that laughter, which was more than any sound we could produce. I still remember that we were reading, I was reading a woodhouse to Baba, something fresh or something new. Yes, and we were laughing. We got into a fit of laughter. And Baba, without sound, was really, you know. And in the end, he said, stop, stop, stop. Enough for today. My face hurts. Because he was laughing without sound. It hurts. Enough, enough for the day. And I read it the second time to him, sometime later. And he said the same thing. Enough, enough. And there were times when Nero Wolfe and Archie, some delightful scenes would occur, and Baba would really enjoy it. Said the same thing. Enough, enough. And there were times when Nero Wolfe and Archie, some delightful scenes would occur, and Baba would really enjoy it. It was great fun reading to him because Baba liked it in different voices. You see, when Baba gives you something, a gift, if you're talented in any way, even if it's in a nonsensical way like mine, where I could act and mimic and things like that, when you are his, he will accept everything. It'll become useful. I mean, my way, these things were useful to Baba. Because when I read to him, I would mimic different sounds, different voices. Mira Wolf's voice was different. Archie's was different. The woman's was different. The Cockney was different. The American was different. You know, all... So Baba said it was like a stage setting. And I realized and say, because not only that, the other gift that Baba gave me, which was useful, which he used, I don't say it was useful for him, but which he used, because when we offer him, he accepts and uses, was my writing. Because I'm not a graduate. I left school to come to Baba. I am not a really educated person. But my writing and essay, even when I went from a vernacular school to an English school, when I didn't know a word of English, and I had to pick up English, not only within a year was I at the top of the class, but they would keep my essay books, the teacher would keep to help the class while I went on to the next. Now, you see, that was because I was to write for Baba. Family letters and things. I'm trying to say that nothing is from us except the longing to give to him, the longing to please to him. That comes from us. Nothing else. He gives so we can give to him. Everything that we give, he has given so that we can give, and so he uses. And I remember because in the essay, the thing came in useful for my family letters that I would write out and on all the others. I still remember that there was a point when Dr. Donkin was writing Wayfarers, and he was a perfectionist. He did everything perfectly. His knowledge of anything was perfect, too, whether it was birds or dogs or gardens or God. You know, he would make the chart. He could make the chart so perfectly. Not a single thing would mar. In fact, he never thought it was perfect enough. He was not satisfied with Wayfarers. Although we were. So there was one funny sentence came up, and he wasn't quite sure whether the word should be whom or who. Now, this is the funny thing, this is what I'm saying. So Kitty was asked, and Kitty said, well, I think it's whom. And somebody said, no, it should be who. Then it became an ashram issue. It was going around among the women. And this was a topic of discussion. Is it who or whom? Now, Meru's sister, Nagu, who is a doctor now in England, she even did it by mathematics in some way. I don't know.
No.
She said, well, when you put this over this and you multiply by this and that, it comes to whom? And Kitty explained to me by grammar, because I was the only one that was not going to budge. I said, I can't explain, but my year, my mimicry year, you know, I know that it's wrong, that it should be who and not whom, or whichever, vice versa. So this intrigued Dr. Donkin. And he wrote to Cambridge in England. And he asked, he gave that sentence. And they asked, and it turned out that I was right. But it was so, you know, it didn't seem like that an achievement to me. Because it came naturally. And why did it come naturally? Because Baba had this work for me. When he wants you to ride, he provides you with a horse. He wanted me to write, so he gave me that. It's the same with the others. Look at Rana with her as an artist. I mean, she hadn't done figures and things before, she says. Although she also did the, you know, the designs and the beautiful way she would intertwined leaves and flowers and designs and all. It's marvelous. But she hadn't done figures. But then when she came to Baba, that was a background, a foundation, a start that Baba wanted. But then he put his in it. And it was his grace, because look at the things that she'd been doing. Of course, that's her story. I shouldn't be telling, but it's...